on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, listening today to the story of Ray Maloney. I caught up with him in Bonita Springs, Florida, where I also had the pleasure of meeting his wife of 70 years, Cressida. You can see a picture of those two at hometownheroesradio.com or on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. They got married before Ray flew his first mission in a P-47 Thunderbolt. When we left off, Ray had mentioned being shot down while flying with the 86th Fighter Bomber Group, the 527th Squadron. That was on your 37th mission.
But I imagine there were some eventful moments on the first 36 of them. And that P-47, I've talked to several guys who flew them. And they all speak very fondly of that plane because they always say it could really take a beating. Did you prove that in those first 36 missions?
Yes, I did. Yeah, we got, I guess several times I got holes in airplanes, small ones, you know, bullet holes. But if I may, I can tell you the most frightening experience I had in the war, and it wasn't when I was shot down. It was when we were still on Corsica, and I think it was about my fourth or fifth mission. And we had taken off with 12 aircraft, and I was, they've got a red flight, a white flight, and a blue flight, four aircraft each. And I was in the blue flight, and I was tail end Charlie way over here. And if you remember Corsica, it was mostly mountains and just a little beach line along the east coast. And the leader of this squadron was a new guy to being a leader. So we started, made a 360 over the field, and then started to climb over the mountains. And he kept getting steeper and steeper and finally started to turn a little bit. And you remember in formation flying, the guys on the inside the turn are throttling back because right. They still have to want to stay with it. You know, this guy is making a bigger circle than the one down here is making a smaller circle.
Just like on a racetrack.
Yeah. It's exactly. See, so as the... When he kept climbing and climbing, we were getting slower and slower, and we had two 1,000-pound bombs and eight 50-caliber machine guns, if you remember the jug, the P-47, and loaded with ammo. So we were very heavy, and it was a hot day, and he climbs, gets steeper and steeper, and finally realized he wasn't going to clear the mountains in Corsica. And so he starts a steep right turn, and I'm way down here, you know. And just as he starts pulling it steeper and steeper, I'm almost back into nothing, you know, trying to stay with the formation. And I feel the airplane flutter. And if you know anything about flutter, that's the warning that you're going to stall.
Yeah.
You know, it's a flutter in your controls. You can feel it. And I, you know, scared. The hair went up my back, my neck, and I dove out of the formation. That was the only thing I could do. But we were so low, you know, squadron, the flight way back here, that as soon as I dove away to try to get some airspeed, I'm looking at the trees.
Uh-oh.
And I'm right on the top of the trees. And it was the most frightening experience that I had in all of my flying, because I thought, I'm not going to make it. I had all this weight and no airspeed. You know, I was right on stall.
Ooh.
And it just was frightening. Boy, I came out of that flight, you know.
Shaking a little, huh?
Yeah, it shook me, yeah.
And you mentioned at one point, kept on flying every day. And that's one thing that's always struck me about the guys who flew missions like you, where you're dive bombing and skip bombing and strafing all these low altitude targets.
Yeah, right.
That you guys really were flying almost nonstop. I mean, it sounds kind of exhausting. How frequent were your missions?
Yeah, well... You know, you don't fly every – the squadron flies every day.
Yeah.
But you don't happen to be on the flight schedule every day unless things are really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd fly a mission and maybe another day or so before you'd be signed for a mission again. So a day or so between each mission, mm-hmm. I think. And again, the weather would come in. Sometimes, you know, you get bad weather. You couldn't fly at all, so the whole squadron, the whole group would be down.
Did you hear from your wife much while you were over there?
Yes, when I was, you know, before I got shut down, she was great. She'd write every day, you know, and put lipstick on the letter at the bottom. this kind of stuff. We were kids, you know.
Yeah. What was your relationship like with the rest of the pilots in your squadron?
Fine. I had about four or five very good friends that I had, you know, gone through training with. When we went over to Italy and got signed to various groups. I ended up with two of my best friends, both Jewish fellows, too, good yeah. pilots. So I stayed with them in the 527th Fighter Squad. And the other two went to another group, 56th or one of the others, and so I lost track of them. But I heard later that both of them were killed. They were shot down. Mm. And one of them was my best friend, John Mosqua. And my son's middle name is John, and I made it. I named him after my friend John. And he was shooting up a freight train, and it blew up in front of him. You know, you never know what's in the train. It's a lot of times it's ammo.
Yeah.
You know, and it blew up in his face, and he was killed.
So, well, that was going to be my next question. How does that affect you? Here you are, a 22-year-old kid. Well, I guess you wouldn't turn 22 till you were a POW, but so you're, what, 21 years old over there flying these missions. You find out stuff like that is happening. Friends of yours die, and those are the same kind of missions you were flying. I mean, did it ever occur to you that that could be you?
Yeah, of course. But I never, I've thought all the time, you know, I'm going to get killed or I might get killed. But I never thought about being a POW.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was kind of not one of the options.
It was A or B, and that wasn't
was
on
a
the sheet.
It was A or B.
Huh?
You yeah. survived. And of the two Jewish fellows that I ended up with, Paul Lefkow, he was shot down, and he was in Stalag Luft 1 on the
Germany.
Yeah, in Germany.
Uh-huh.
And Al Leventhal was the only guy in my group that finished his tour, and I think he went to 111, 112 missions.
Wow.
And if I may, a little side issue, Al, the whole time I knew him when we were growing up, through flight training, rather, he wanted to be a veterinarian. Mm-hmm. That was his ambitious. When he got out, he was going to go and train, become a vet. Well, he became a vet, you know, after the war, he finished his tour. But when I was shut down, you lose track of these people, you know, And 40 years later, I got a letter from a fellow in the squadron who was trying to generate a reunion.
Sure. Right?
And he had listed the people that he had made contact with him. One of them was Al Leventhal, and he was living in Bolton, Connecticut, and I was in Milford, Connecticut. You know? And so I called him up. You know, we had one of these reunions. Oh, where you been? You know, so we had a great time.
40 years later, you had your own two-man reunion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, just before I went over, when I got married on the leave that we had just before we went overseas, so did Al. And he got married. And when we went into fighter training down in Georgia, he brought his bride down and I brought mine down. And there was one other couple who got married. And the three of us rented a cabin outside of the base down at Harris Neck, Georgia. There was two bedrooms and a couch. So the three newlyweds lived in it, and so every third night, you got the couch.
The rotation,
the rotation, right?
Oh, that's classic.
And that poor guy, he got killed too. Ward Worthington was his name. He bought it. But Al finished it all. And the bottom line of this, the reason I'm telling you this story is my daughter, the one who's here right now, lived with her husband up near Hartford in Vernon, Connecticut.
Yeah.
And so when I told her a story about Leventhal, she said, "What'd you say his name was?" I said, "Leventhal." She said, "We've been taking our dogs and cats to Al Leventhal for years and years, and they never made a connection."
How about that?
Because the name, you know, she...
That's classic.
Married. Yeah.
Wow. You never know with these stories, and it's only going to get more interesting as we discuss what happened to you in early November of 1944.
Okay.
Before that 37th mission, did it feel any different than any of those other missions? Did you have any kind of concern or inclination?
Now that, you know, I look back on it, I didn't really appreciate it or focus on it at the time, but I think you should start to wear down a little bit. You know, you begin to think that maybe the odds are going to catch up with you. And so you become a little bit more cautious. You're not quite as reckless, as you are when you first start your combat. And I'm sure the guys, you know, felt the same thing. And, you know, I have to emphasize, the only heroes that I can see, and that most of our guys, are the ones that were killed. The rest of us, and everybody, I think, in combat is scared skinny. You know, you it's there. You know, you're facing it, and there's all these jokes about you strap yourself in this airplane and you push the throttle forward, and if you're not careful, it kills you. You know, and so we, you know, brush that off, and then at the end of the flight, we run to the bar, you know, and have a few drinks to try to calm yourself down. But it's there all the time, and as you're continuing your combat tour, it starts to wear at you a little bit. You know, you start worrying about, you know, I'm a third of the way through. Am I going to make it?
Especially when you brought that P-47 back with holes in the wings so many times.
Yeah. Well, not a lot. I think it was about three times there were a couple of holes in them. But we strafed, you know, a lot of times we'd attack a German convoy going down the road. And these guys all had guns, and so as you went over, they were all firing up at you and throwing their helmets and muskets up at you, you know, because you're right at treetop level.
Yeah.
And you're going like mad. But
what does that feel like physically when you make one of those runs, and especially if you're dive bombing? I have to imagine that the physical toll that takes on your body in those few seconds is pretty severe.
Yeah, you pull a few Gs, but I think the bombing, as far as, you know, getting hit during a bomb run, I don't, yeah, because you wind up, the P-47 was so big and heavy that when you put that nose down and dive, it winds up like, you know, there's nothing could stay with it. And the word was always, if you get a 109 on your tail, head for the deck, because he's not going to be able to stay with you, you know. Mm-hmm. It winds up 400, 500, 600 miles an hour. And during the war, there were a number of occasions where fellows actually entered transonic. They almost went supersonic.
Yeah.
Paint would peel off the wings and things like this, you know, with a jug. And so being hit in a dive was really not a big worry. But it was when you were attacking people that could shoot back at you that, you know. And a lot of times there would be banks of, in fact, when I was shot down, it was a classic. It was a car with four banks of 20 millimeters, and each gun has four barrels. So you have 16 20 millimeters firing at you. And so long as you're, you know, going by, they have to lead you so much that rarely can they get you. But as soon as you turn around and start committing, you know, now you become a stable target. You're coming right at them, you know, and you can see these baseballs coming at you, you know, as you go down. But
you mean you had your eyes open?
yeah, you better, because there's other guys doing it too, you know. You know, we don't want to collide with each other.
So you're in a dive, and this anti-aircraft artillery is coming up at you.
Yeah.
And where did it hit your plane?
I don't know. It was in the fuel system somewhere because I felt the bang, you know. And it took a few seconds as I peeled off and I saw some more of the baseballs, you know, coming back at you. Within a few seconds, I noticed my fuel pressure started to fluctuate. And then finally it started to zero and I panicked. I didn't. And the P-47 has, for starting your engine, there's a little primer. Mm-hmm. You turn it into a little primer right on the instrument panel. And so the only thing I could think of, I uncorked it and started turning it, and I could bring the fuel pressure up, I could, you know, a little bit, so it kept the engine running while I primed, and I peeled off this thing and started making a turn south. And I told him, I said, I'm hit. And my wingman stayed with me, and I thought, well, maybe, and I got it up to, I think, about 7,000 or 8,000 feet, still pumping like mail at this thing.
Was your arm getting tired of pumping that little
primer? Yeah, I was frightened to death, you know. And my wingman said, you're smoking. It looks like you're on fire. He couldn't see fire, but he could see smoke coming out of me. So I said, yeah, I think I am on fire, because it was seemed to be getting warm in the cockpit. But I started to head south, and you got to cross the Apennine Mountains in Italy. I can't remember what the altitudes were. Probably maybe 8,000 on down, you know.
Sure.
And again, without power, the P-47 is so heavy, it's only going one way when you don't have power, and that's down. And so I couldn't hold altitude. I kept falling down. And finally, I got to a point where I had a kind of a hill, a mountain in front of me, and I knew I couldn't clear that, so I turned this way and headed down, and now I'm down in a valley. And it's amazing. I've thought through many times since then about how I ever managed to go through this thinking process that probably took a split second. Because as soon as I looked at this valley, I knew there was no place I could put this airplane. So I had to get out of it, mm-hmm. you know? And just like that, I just unhooked everything, climbed out the left side, and kicked out. And I saw the airplane still smoking, and I saw it one quick thing, and I looked back, and bam, it was that quick. And since then, I've tried to, in my mind, because people have a lot say, how high were you? I don't know how high I was, but it was in this valley, and I was heading down into the valley. And I, in my mind's eye, when I've tried to recreate those few seconds, and I think it was about no more than 5 seconds, maybe 4 seconds before I hit the ground. And my chute, I never got that jerk, you know, that you're supposed to get. The good Lord, I think, was watching over me that day. And my wingman, I found out much later, years later, he reported that he said, I don't think he made it. He said, I didn't see that chute really blossom. It streamed out. But and I hit right on my heels and my rear end, and it went, bah, you know, I could feel it. It was a terrible pain.
Yeah, I can only imagine what that felt like, and it's hard to imagine that you actually survived that. I have a few questions to follow up on it, but we need to take another commercial break here. When we come back, some of what Ray Maloney went through after being shot down in his P-47 and bailing out at very low altitude over German-held territory. Hometown Heroes is coming right back after this.